Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Borough Market Podcast, where we stroll around London's oldest food market each week to chat to the traders and producers to find the stories behind the stalls. This week we meet Liesl Taylor, who, with husband, Ithtyd Llyr Dunsford, has created one of the most innovative contributions to the nose-to-tail movement in the country, the award-winning Charcutier Limited. I caught up with her at Borough Market to ask how a designer and filmmaker couple from Cardiff became the word in artisan foods and what that word really means.
A charcutier is somebody that processes an animal from nose to tail with total respect, adding value to every part of the animal, but using as many processes as is possible to create a variety of products, a variety of preservation techniques. So it's not just sorted and air-dried meats, it's cooked and smoked, emulsified products, air-dried, hand-sorted. So I think we felt that the name needed to be something that encompassed everything that we did, and that's everything from sorting and air-drying the meat, but also curing it, semi-curing it, fermenting it, cooking it, smoking it. It's all the processes involved in charcuterie. It's not just about sorting and air-drying.
But it's an extraordinary thing because both you and Ithtyd come from a creative design. I mean, he comes from the film industry and you come from design.
Design, yeah. Very different backgrounds. I mean, to him it's completely natural. He's been brought up doing this every weekend anyway. But his family have farmed in the Gwynedd Valley for, well, as far back as parish records go, so many hundreds of years. And although he was born in Cardiff and brought up in Cardiff, he spent all of his weekends and holidays on the farm working, you know, with the family, and once or twice a year they would process a pig. So he'd be involved in all of that. He'd be involved in sorting and cooking and processing the whole animal from nose to tail. So for him it's completely natural.
And you?
Not at all. I'm not a farm girl at all. I grew up in Cardiff, was born in Cardiff.
City girl.
Yeah, completely city girl. And I love London, I love the buzz of it when I'm down here. But when we first moved to the farm, I had a pair of little tiny wellies with kitten heels on that were red with white spots. And I was teetering around the farmyard, not quite knowing what to do with myself, thinking, what do I do with that chicken? You know, it's got loose. Am I supposed to pick it up and put it back? I'm not a farm girl at all. I am now. I love it down there. I absolutely love it down there.
Is there some kind of link between the kind of the graphics and textiles that you were working with and the pigs? I mean, if there is none, I won't make the link. But I just wondered, you know, is there?
I don't know. I mean, I think that perhaps the craftsmanship of it all appeals to me. Even though I worked in a very technical side, was doing computer-aided design rather than hand-stitching and things like that. But I think it's the attention to detail and it's the level of craftsmanship that I kind of see a correlation
yes.
with the both of them.
Yes, I think
that's probably the only link, to be honest.
Actually, people love that, don't they? People do love a bit of craftsmanship. Mm. Well, I was going to say in this country, but actually everyone loves a bit of craftsmanship.
Yes.
But the slowing down.
Yeah,
and let's talk a little bit about that, because you are an absolute ambassador for slow food. If there's nothing slower than charcuterie. Yeah.
Completely. It's just what we do, it's the way that we've always lived, it's the way that his family have always lived. We don't really know any other way, and suddenly now it has this name, slow food, and we're absolutely in tune with the whole principles that have been laid out on paper. That it's so nice to see so many people becoming passionate about slow food and getting involved in the slow food movement and actually really embracing it. So
yes. And actually, slow food movement sounds like some kind of activist-y thing, but actually it's very, very foodie now, isn't it? It's about taking the time to really appreciate good food, knowing where it comes from, good provenance, good husbandry.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was at Terra Madre in the autumn of last year, and it was so heartening to see that everybody that was shopping at Slow Food or visiting, you know, going to the lectures, they were completely, completely engrossed in it. You know, there was families with kids that were totally, totally in tune with wanting to know every detail about how this cocoa bean was produced and how it was ground and how does it then become chocolate or something like that. You know, I mean, I'm using cocoa as an example, but it's just, it's so nice to see so many people wanting to know every single detail about it.
Because you and Ishtar have done a lot of travelling, haven't you?
Well, Ishtar's done a lot of travelling. I have mostly stayed at home to do the processing while he's been away.
Oh, nice. How did he manage that one?
I don't know. He wangled it somehow.
He's
I'm not
got
quite
to do
sure.
His research.
No, I mean, we have been off together. We did spend 2 months travelling North America and eating our way through various North American charcuterie producers, actually, which is quite an interesting take on it.
Where did you find
those? Mostly Pacific Northwest. So we went from Vancouver in Canada and then travelled down through Portland, Oregon, down through Seattle. Seattle, Portland, and then all the way down to San Francisco. And it was, I think he had this particular scholarship to look at the pork supply chain back in America. This was the HCC scholarship a long time ago.
HCC?
Herbie Key Cymru, Meat Promotion Wales. And he wanted to go to North America because there's less of a history. You know, there's such a strong history in Europe of charcuterie. And in North America, the movement out there is quite fresh. It's quite new. So he wanted to see how they had managed that, you know, without all the tradition attached to it.
And what did you find?
A lot of it, there is the European tradition coming through. You know, there are really strong companies there that have got an Italian heritage background, but most of them are starting from scratch. What we found really interesting was the whole brand. What I found really interesting, anyway, was the whole branding side of it. So in Italy and France, all of the branding is very beautiful and ornate and very heritage orientated, and you know, lots of family history and many hundreds of years. And of course, in America, that doesn't necessarily exist. So everything's completely fresh and completely new and bold and. That, from my point of view, that's what I found interesting about the trip. And then the taste of the product is completely different flavour profile to most of the products that we tasted across Italy and France. Because they've been mostly done in technological chambers or you know, smaller, more scientific facilities. So they're working very much with meat science as opposed to flora and fauna in the air. And, you know, it's quite a fresh take on it.
And you've brought those ideas back to your stall here in Borough Market and to the business in Llanelli,
Well, it's both, actually. We're quite proud that we combine those traditional elements with the meat science. We're very lucky in that, I mean, Ishtar's obviously has got the family background, and then through his travels across the world, he's picked up on all these different techniques and tips and tricks. But we've got a lady that works with us as well who's also a food scientist, so her speciality is meat science. And the two of them combined, I mean, Ishtar also did some courses out at Iowa State University purely on meat science.
And what does that mean for the customer? I'm kind of thinking, wow, that's interesting, but what does that mean in my mouth?
For us, it was more about understanding how the product occurs naturally, without having to use all the chemicals and the scientific approach. So even though the course was about processing and chemistry and things like that, it was actually more about understanding how the meat proteins and meat molecules work naturally, and then relating that to something that tradition produces naturally. And then all of a sudden you sort of understand, oh, that's why this happens. This is why the fats go rancid more quicker. Or
give me an example.
This
what
is
were
why,
you learning? What, why would the fats go rancid?
So it depends very much on the feed that the animal has been fed. If you're producing charcuterie using a much younger pig that has been fed on perhaps, you know, genetically modified grown soya or fast growth hormone meat-based feed.
God forbid.
Which, you know, we would never, ever touch. But the meat just doesn't work. It just doesn't. You get, a pale sort of flaccid meat. The fat doesn't have the same fatty acid balance. And it means then that the fat goes rancid much quicker. The fat can remain soft. It won't be hard. It won't be clean. It won't be white. And it was just little things like that that he's kind of brought back. And
so your customers were really tasting the difference, weren't they?
They really do seem to comment on how different it is. I mean, there's so many different ways to make, for example, just a simple salami. You can make it, if you want, in 24 hours, or you can make it in 3 weeks, just for the tiny snack size. And the one that takes 3 weeks to make will taste completely different to the one that takes 24 hours to make. And we do get a lot of customers, which is really lovely, coming and, you know, they'll have a little taste and their eyes will virtually pop out of their head because they're like, wow, why is this so different? It's so the fat is so clean, or it's the texture is so beautifully uniform all the way through. You know, you don't get this kind of softness or acidity, or just strange.
Do you have to know your charcuterie to have that kind of experience? I'm wondering whether I would notice.
I don't know. I think perhaps if you compare the two side by side.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
They would, and there's obviously, we can only talk about our own product, yeah. And I would never want to sort of put a comparison next to it, but I think that it's the same if you're tasting, you know, a chocolate or a wine or something, you will suddenly find the one that you really become passionate about, or really you really enjoy tasting, you really enjoy eating.
Liesl and Ittet have also created their own brand of heritage pigs. I asked her how a pig becomes a heritage pig.
So traditionally reared, rare breed, pedigree Welsh pork. They're the pigs that we keep on our own farm. We've also got a few farms locally that keep those pigs. And there's one farm in Lincolnshire that keeps the same breed. So they're Welsh by breed, but not Welsh by geography necessarily. But they are, whether it's from our own farm or from one of the others, they are always traditionally reared, which means that they are grown as slowly and as naturally as possible, and we don't use growth hormones, we don't use routine antibiotics at all the things that you would expect of a
happy pig,
of a good pig. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. We're not free range, but that is because the area of Wales that we live on is wet, low-lying wetland, and it's actually much kinder to have housing for the pigs. So that they're not outdoors all the time in a foot of mud. You know, it's a much healthier way. Well, they do, but I wouldn't want to leave them outside all year round. So,
Didn't Ittet create the heritage name of the pig?
The pedigree Welsh pig has just recently been given traditional speciality guarantee status. So it's a European specialty food approval name, basically. Very similar to something like, yeah, a mark of approval. Yes. It has to be an absolutely pure pedigree pig. And the feed must not have any GM sources in it at all. So, I mean, for us and actually for the TSG status, it must include at least one form of co-waste food product. In our instance, it's most of the food is waste product anyway. But things like fallen apples or spent brewer's grain or waste vegetables or something like that, something that is naturally occurring in that environment and in that locality.
Pigs are famous for eating absolutely everything. Is that true? Is that good for them?
We actually think that the nutrition of the pig has to come first. And that also goes alongside its welfare and its emotional well-being. So, to my mind, a pig is not a rubbish bin. It has to have a really good, balanced diet. So we do use waste food products, waste co-food products in a lot of the feed that the animal receives, and that can be things like whey from the cheese industry, homegrown barley, it can be spent brewer's grain, waste vegetables from a local veg supplier, you know, trimmings, things like that. But we wouldn't feed it purely kitchen scraps. That wouldn't give it a good diet. It's the same as a human being, you know, you can't just live on scraps alone.
That sounds like pig heaven. It just sounds like the way the pigs have always lived. You know, it's not a new breed. How did we move so far away from it?
I don't know. I think the demand for pork at a much cheaper price, packaged cleanly in a supermarket, is so far removed from the reality of it. I think it's a price war. You know, it's the fact that pork prices have been driven down by the consumer only willing to pay a certain amount. And then intensive pig farming has become more prevalent both in the UK and in Europe, and it means that the pork price is just going down and down, and we've moved to using, you know, hybrid pigs that grow much faster, that can be killed at a much younger age, and it's actually a friend of ours referred to pork recently as a white meat, and we said, pork is a red meat, why do you think it's a white meat? And he said, because that's what he's so familiar to seeing in the supermarket, is this very, very pale pink pork. It's not pork, that's water.
Yeah. Do you actually sell pork and sausages?
We actually process most of it. Occasionally we will sell the tenderloins, and we do sell fresh sausages as well, although they don't make it as far as Borough. But most of what we do is cured and processed further.
So tell me about being at Borough.
It's amazing. I mean, it's a huge privilege. I used to come here as a tourist 10, 15 years ago, and I remember we both came down on Christmas Eve when the game was hanging and the crowds were, you know, you couldn't move. And I remember us, I think this is before we ran the food business, and, you know, I can remember us saying, gosh, it must be fantastic to have a food business running from Borough Market. You're right in the hub of all these amazing producers, these fantastic historical businesses.
It's like being on the red carpet at the Oscars, isn't it? But do you actually talk to each other?
We do. It's good fun. It's good banter. I mean, we've actually just moved. We were in the Green Market, so we were in between Paul the Fish and Jock with the Fruit and Veg, and the banter was just brilliant. So, but we've moved over here. It's equally good fun. Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear the podcast with Paul Day as well on the website. He's a laugh. Yeah. What do you take home at the end of the day then? Which traders do you go to?
I always go to Mons Cheese, get a nice bit of Beaufort from Max. I often go over to the truffle stall and pick up some porcini mushrooms, which we use in our production as well.
I mean, do you actually use any of the other traders for your ingredients? Are you finding new stuff?
We're starting to. We have just approached Spice Mountain to try and get some. We're trying to get hold of some quite specific herbs and spices, which they don't stock here, so we're asking them if they can find those for us.
From one of Ilta's travels?
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
Which ones? What's trying to get hold of?
So there's a couple of hot peppers that we're trying to get hold of
from
Calabria, which I know that you can get Calabrian hot peppers, but there's a specific one that we're trying to get hold of.
Very fussy.
Black anise. We can't find black anise anywhere, so if anybody knows how to get hold of black anise, then...
Where did he find it first?
It was in a recipe for a product in North America. Black anise.
So you're part of Wasted, which is this new London initiative on the top of Selfridge's roof.
Yes, it is. It's on the roof restaurant at Selfridge's. It's Chef Dan Barber and his team from Blue Hill Farm in New York that ran a similar project out in America that had rave reviews, was incredibly successful. You know, he's been dubbed as the philosopher chef. I mean, he's a fantastic character and a great ambassador actually for sustainable food approaches. So
that's going to be with a lot of really interesting chefs and a lot of other producers, educating Londoners to think again about their waste. Your pigs are on the menu there, but you're using that much more sort of ethical, much more thoughtful idea of what waste is in terms of how good it is for your pigs.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, everything that we do, we always do use co-waste projects, whether it's with the pigs or whether it's the rose veal that we use. But we've also used spent hens for this project with Wasted as well. So they are 3 to 4 year old egg-laying birds that no longer are efficient. They don't lay enough eggs, basically, for them to be worth their value in keeping them as a laying hen. So it's kind of nose-to-tail ethos, but far beyond that. The things that these guys are doing at the Wasted Project is not just about using every part of the animal. It's about using every part of the animal from before the moment it's born to beyond its end of life, and then the whole processing in between. You know, they're using the waste to process again in the kitchen.
And again, this is not new. This is how people used to do it in a much more sustainable way. Never called it sustainable in granny days, but it's about bringing back the old ways, and it's better for everyone, including the pigs.
Yes, yeah. In fact, I think Dan Barber quoted in one of the articles that I'd read that so many years ago this project could never have existed. There was no waste. And now it's almost become a trend to think of food waste as a trendy thing to do, and to us it's just the way it should be. It shouldn't be a trend, it should be a way of life all the time.
You're right there, Treacle.
Thanks for listening to the Borough Market podcast. You can find much more about the traders and the market by going to boroughmarket.org.uk, and while you're there, do subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you next week for more stories behind the stalls at London's most famous market.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.